Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome, bienvenidos, bonjour, and willkommen. Howdy! It's the Russ Belville Show. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee, and this is the home of truly radical progressives. We're broadcasting from our flagship studio, AM 620 KPOJ in the Rose City, Portland, Oregon. Streaming online at 620kpoj.com and blogging at radicalrus.net. You can join in the fun. Give us a call at 866-55-77-377. Oh, we've got a jam-packed show for you today. It's been one heck of a week in the world of news. First of all, the big story that we're going to have to talk about today is the unbelievable testimony of Deputy Attorney General James Comey.
I was very upset. I was angry. I thought I had just witnessed an effort to take advantage of a very sick man who did not have the powers of the Attorney General because they've been transferred to me.
Oh, boy, this is quite the story. And I'll tell you what, we're going to talk about it, even though the reactions to the Comey testimony from the White House.
Kelly, there's a lot of speculation about what happened and what didn't happen. I'm not going to talk about it. It's a very sensitive program. I will tell you that, one, that the program is necessary to protect the American people, and it's still necessary because there's still an enemy that wants to do us harm.
Well, George W. Bush isn't going to talk about it, but we sure are going to talk about it. Some other things on the radar we're going to talk about today, the immigration compromise bill. Now, is this just amnesty for undocumented workers?
It is not amnesty. This will restore the rule of law. Without legislation, we will have anarchy.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Senator Spector. That's good to know. And speaking of senators, our old favorite Senator John McCain has slipped just a little farther over the edge of sanity. Yeah, Senator Gollum, he can't wait to get his precious presidency. He'll do anything for it. Speaking of the president, George W. Bush doesn't think that the troops deserve a pay raise, and the Army shuts down YouTube and MySpace.
Bring them on.
Yeah, and the GOP candidates looking to run for president, well, they can't get over arguing over which one of them loves torture more.
Nuclear devices have gone off in the United States, more are planned, and we're wondering about whether waterboarding would be a bad thing to do. I'm looking for Jack Bauer at that time, let me tell you.
Well, you gotta love your candidates that can't tell fact from reality. Of course, that'll fit perfectly in the Republican Party. Except for one guy. They had to jump all over the one Republican with enough sense to end the war.
I would ask the congressman to withdraw that comment and tell us that he didn't really mean that.
Congressman?
If we think that we can do what we want around the world and not incite hatred, then we have a problem. They don't come here to attack us because we're rich and we're free. They come and they attack us because we're over there.
That's right, and it's finally nice to hear a Republican say that. And speaking of the silly things that Republicans say, today is the 30-year anniversary of this statement.
When the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
So it's been one heck of a week, and in addition to all those big stories, well, Paul Wolfowitz is gone, Tony Blair is leaving his post as the prime minister, the gas prices are out there rising and rising and rising, smoking's being banned everywhere, Glenn Beck continues his reign of error on CNN, and 3,408 United States soldiers have perished in the war in Iraq there. But hey, it's not all bad news here at the Russ Belville Show. My man Blake Lewis is in the finals of American Idol. Hey, that's got to be something, right? And hey, there's one less crazy, homophobic, anti-Semitic, hate-mongering man of God on the public airways. That's always a good thing. And also, it's only 611 days left until the end of the Bush administration, if not sooner, Ms. Pelosi. Hint, hint, hint. So let's get into it. I'm Radical Russ, and this is the Russ Belville Show.
Happy days are here again.
Well, I was going to start off here with Jerry Falwell. My engineer Ricky Champagne is getting a little bit into it. Ricky, Ricky, happy days are here again. I mean, come on, man. That's kind of cruel. I mean, this, you know, we may have disagreed with Mr. Falwell from time to time here at the Russ Belleville Show, but, you know, that's not polite. I mean, my mom always taught me that you should never, never speak ill of the dead. I mean, we need to have a little respect and decorum here. I mean, sure. Some people. Come on, Ricky. Okay. You know, I suppose there's going to be a few people that are happy, though. I mean, I imagine that anyone who cares about the separation of church and state might be a little bit happy. You know, when Falwell was saying things like this, he said, "I hope to live to see the day when, as in the early days of our country, we won't have any public schools. The churches will have taken them over again, and Christians will be running them. What a happy day that will be," end quote. Yeah, Jerry Falwell wrote that. And then after he wrote that, someone called him on it, right? And they said, "Oh, Mr. Falwell, don't you think this is, you know, a pretty bad thing about separation of church and state, you know, having the churches run the schools?" And he lied about it. He outright just said, "No, I never wrote that. I never wrote that thing." And they went back and they found the book that he wrote it in, and this was back in 1979, and he denied it. So, well, there's your Christian values for you, lying about your own writing there. Here's another thing. You know, another group that might be kind of happy that there's no more Jerry Falwell might be, again, people who are interested in the separation of church and state. Here's another one of his great quotes. "The ACLU is to Christians what the American Nazi Party is to Jews."
Godwin alert. Hysterical reference to Nazi Germany.
Yeah, see, that's one of our rules here at the Russ Belleville Show. We don't allow any hysterical references to Hitler or Nazi Germany. That's called Godwin's Law. I don't know if you've heard of that. That's an internet thing. But Godwin's Law says whoever mentions Hitler first loses the argument. So you lose the argument there, Jerry Falwell. But again, we want to have some decorum here. We shouldn't be celebrating maybe there's another group that's kind of happy. I mean, maybe the Jewish community is happy after he had said things like, "Is the Antichrist alive and here today?" Probably, because when he appears during the tribulation period, he will be a full-grown counterfeit of Christ. Of course he'll be Jewish. Yeah, okay. Here's another one of his statements. "I do not believe that God answers the prayer of any unredeemed Gentile or Jew." Okay, so maybe, again, some people are a little happy that he might be gone here. And of course, you know, homosexuals and people who are HIV positive, he never stopped hating on those people. He says, AIDS is not just God's punishment for homosexuals. It is God's punishment for the society who tolerates homosexuals.
You know, you almost got to be a homosexual to be recognized in the entertainment industry anymore. Ellen and all the rest, I love them, pray for their souls. But they're immoral. And the Hollywood scene of 5 and 8 and 10 marriages, not something to be emulated.
Okay, Mr. Falwell. You know, when I heard that little quote, I thought back to the old Johnny Carson routine. You remember Johnny Carson? We'd do Carnac the Magnificent. So imagine Carnac with the envelope saying, 5, 8, and 10 marriages. Describe the front runners in the Republican Party. Yeah, you know, if that's something not to be emulated, Mr. Falwell, well, maybe a few of those Republicans like Giuliani and Gingrich and McCain, all these guys with the multiple marriages, they needed a little bit more of your preaching there. Other people that might be happy that Jerry Falwell's no longer with us. Anyone who has a concern about the environment or global warming. I mean, Jerry Falwell would actually say, this is another one of his quotes, he'd say, "It is God's planet and he's taking care of it. And I don't believe that anything we do will raise or lower the temperature 1 point."
When they called and said, "Will you sign this?" I said, "No." Why? I said, "Because I don't believe in global warming in the first place. I don't believe we cause it. I don't think the science supports it."
Yeah, that's Jerry Falwell talking about the science. You know, Jerry Falwell would be the guy to ask about whether or not the science supports anything. Here's his quote on science. He says, quote, "The Bible is inerrant. It is absolutely infallible, without error in all matters pertaining to faith and practice, as well as in areas such as geography, science, history, etc." Okay, so here's a guy who's getting his scientific notes here from a 2 or 3,000-year-old writings by ancient Bronze Age people, and so he doesn't think the science supports global warming. Well, okay, if that's where you're going to get your scientific information, I suppose you just might be right. You know, to heck with the decorum. You know, I've had it with all these people coming out saying, oh, you can't talk bad about him because he just died. And what about his friends and family? Hey, as far as I'm concerned, one less homophobic, anti-Semitic, hate-mongering idiot that for some reason keeps popping up on my TV claiming to speak for God. Hey, I'm all fine with him being gone. That's fine with me. I don't wish any ill will toward his family or the people that loved him, but aren't his friends and family all Christian? Don't they think he's gone to heaven? I mean, I know if I was in such a heavenly place, I'd be singing.
Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let's sing.
We'll come back with a little bit more on Jerry Falwell right after the break. I'm Russ Belville. This is The Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned to The Russ Belville Show. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. This is The Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star.
Hey, I'm Radical Russ, and we are talking about the end of Jerry Falwell. Yes, Jerry Falwell passed away on Tuesday, and there's been a lot of talk about it on the television and on the radio airwaves. And one of the overriding themes that I've seen happening during these discussions is some of the people on the right who will come out and say, you know, well, how awful that you're dancing on the grave of Jerry Falwell. How terrible that you have no respect for this man. And what about his friends and family that are still in mourning? Isn't this terrible that you're saying these awful things about Jerry Falwell? No, it is not terrible that I'm saying these. I am not saying anything about Jerry Falwell that Jerry Falwell didn't say when he was alive. Did he ever take the time to consider the feelings or the mourning of the people that he was always working against? He was always a tireless advocate, well, not advocate, a tireless opponent of anything having to do with homosexuals or homosexual rights. Did he ever care about the people who are always being, you know, the homosexuals who are being bashed and the homosexuals that are being killed in gay bashing incidents? He'd always claim, well, I don't hate the sinner. I just hate the sin. I just hate what they're doing. And that's a cop-out. That's a cop-out. I am sick and tired of people using religion as their cop-out for the reason that they get a hate. You know, the same type of reasoning that Falwell uses to discriminate against the homosexual community is the same type of reasoning that was used to discriminate against black people and against all sorts of people throughout history. You can read anything you want into the Bible. You can take any sort of Bible quote or Bible verse and twist it around and reinterpret it to make it sound any way you want it to sound. I mean, I was doing a lot of research here on Falwell, and I went back and I took a look at some of his sermons from the early 60s and late 50s when he was first getting his start. And I went back to 1958, and I found this sermon where he's talking about how the African race had descended from Canaan, who was the son of Ham, who was punished for looking at Noah when he was naked. It's a big old long story. But basically, the thrust of his sermon there was that that black people were naturally inferior, were deemed that way by God, and that it was wrong to try to integrate the races here in America. I mean, part of his quote here was, he says, in one northern city, a pastor friend of mine tells me that a couple of the opposite race live next to his church as man and wife. It's just, oh no, the dreadful, terrible thing here. You know, this is something I'm always have been fighting against here at the Russ Belville Show, is this creeping Christian dominionism, this Christian supremacy movement that wants to inject their religious beliefs, their personal religious beliefs onto all of us. You know, he never thought about, you know, what other people were thinking, what his opponents were thinking. They say, well, can't we just have a disagreement about our politics and still not be hateful towards the person? Well, Jerry Falwell was hateful toward the people. I don't care how much he was smiling and how charming he was and what nice little biblical words he was saying. The man was a hate monger. And how can anyone say, How can anyone say that I'm out of line for speaking ill of Jerry Falwell 4 days after he died when he spoke ill of the 3,000 9/11 dead just 3 days after 9/11?
I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face and say, you helped this happen.
Yeah, so was he thinking about the families who had just lost someone in the worst terrorist attack on American soil? Was he thinking about the people who have died of AIDS, the people in the homosexual community who had lost so many of their friends and family throughout the 80s and 90s from the AIDS epidemic? You know, when he's calling out the pagans and the ACLU and the progressives and the secularists who are trying to secularize America, that's me, and that's a lot of you, dear listeners out there. So I've had it. You know, he's going to say don't speak bad about the people are going to say don't speak bad about the dead. Well, he was speaking bad about the dead, and I say what's good for the goose is good for the gander. As I was doing some of this research here, just to wrap this up, here was one quote from him that just really scared me. Kind of a quirky little quote here. He talks about how you'll be riding in an automobile, and how when the rapture comes, if you're a Christian, if you're born again Christian, you'll be pulled right out of your seat. You know, right out of your driver's seat there to go up to heaven, and your car, it says here, let me see here, the unsaved persons in the automobile will suddenly be startled to find the car somewhere crashes. Other cars on the highway driven by believers will suddenly be out of control, and stark pandemonium will occur on every highway in the world where Christians are caught away from the driver's wheel. Well, that's kind of scary, doesn't it? I mean, it makes me think that maybe we shouldn't be giving Christians driver's licenses. I mean, if any moment you're going to be driving down the road and suddenly you're not going to be at the wheel, don't you think that's a little bit of a driving hazard? I mean, you know, maybe we should think about revoking Christians' driver's licenses. You know, I've always wondered about that, too, you know, because it seems to me that there's a whole lot of really bad Christian drivers out there. I mean, look at the sides of the roads. Don't you always see crosses on the side of the road? Yeah, haven't you ever wondered why you never see Stars of David or little Buddhas or anything else or little yin-yang symbols on the side of the road? No, it's always crosses. It's always some Christian that's wrecking on the side of the road there. So maybe there's something to that. Maybe the Christians are bad drivers. I don't know. Hey, you know, I just thought of something. Maybe that's why they put that little fish on their back bumper so you can see them coming. So you'll know that if you're driving down the freeway, you're driving down I-5 or one of the freeways here in the Portland area or wherever you may live out there in this wonderful country of ours, if you see one of those fishes on the bumper, be careful, because if you hear a trumpet, that car just might start careening out of control. Oh, boy. You know, this Reverend, excuse me, I don't mean to call him Reverend. I like to reserve that for people who deserve the title. Jerry Falwell here, now that he's gone. Of course, the other quote that everyone's been pulling up this week is that quote on the Teletubbies, right? Remember when he saw the show, the little kids show, the Teletubbies show, and he thought that Tinky Winky was gay. He thought the Tinky Winky character was gay because, number one, he was purple. And, you know, lavender, that's the gay thing. And number two, he had the little triangle symbol up on top there. So he had to be gay. And I say, Tinky Winky, gay? I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, everybody knows that Speed Racer, Bert and Ernie, Snagglepuss, Batman and Robin, and Fred from Scooby-Doo are gay. But not Tinky Winky. Tinky Winky is a transgendered, bisexual, voyeuristic erotophile. I'm Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show. We come back around the break, around the bottom of the hour. We're going to be talking about the James Comey testimony and the Gonzalez attorney purge. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Russ Belville. This is the Russ Belville Show.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
33 after the hour. You know, this week, the death of Jerry Falwell wasn't the only story, not even close to the biggest story in the news. The big story this week was the testimony, the shocking testimony of former Deputy Attorney General James Comey. With this whole Gonzalez attorney gate purge scandal that's going on here. Boy, if you didn't see this testimony, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that is going to chill you to the bone. I'm just, you know, it's like every time there's a new scandal that comes out from the Bush administration, you have to look at it with just a sense of disbelief. It's just incredible. The levels. I mean, this is the anniversary, by the way, of when Nixon said the whole illegal thing, you know, that if the president does it, it's not illegal.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Yeah. And so that whole mindset has infected the Bush administration to the very core. You know, Bush isn't the president of the United States. No, ladies and gentlemen, he's not the president of you and me. George W. Bush is the president of the Republican Party. And that's what they've been trying to do. They've been trying to set up a one-party rule in this country under the direction of Karl Rove, a.k.a. Turd Blossom. His big master plan was to try to institute a 100-year Republican rule. That was his goal, was to set it up and to set up the wheels of justice here so that the Republicans would have a permanent majority. Because, of course, when the American people don't agree with your policies, because most Americans don't really agree with Republican policies, well, then you have to lie to them. You have to fool them. You have to pull the wool over their eyes in order to maintain power. And part of this plan then was for Attorney General Gonzalez, to fire these U.S. attorneys who either weren't prosecuting enough Democratic voter fraud cases in swing states, or to keep Republican cronies get rid of some attorneys who were trying to prosecute Republicans. So the whole idea here was to grease the wheels of justice here, to set up, to rig the game, to work the refs so that they could always have this Republican majority. Now, all of this has been unraveling over the past couple of weeks with the various lies and obfuscations from Attorney General Gonzalez. But this testimony of James Comey the other day, this may be the nail in the coffin of Gonzalez's career. The theory here, this really gets me. What happened in a thumbnail sketch here is that they were trying to get the NSA wiretapping legal. They were trying to make it so that the president could spy on any American citizen at any time he wanted, with any means necessary, with no court order, with no warrant, with no approval from a judge, just because if the president does it, it's not illegal. That's their theory. So what happened then is when this wiretapping program was coming up for renewal, well, this was going to be renewed on March 11th, and the Justice Department was going to have to sign off on it. Now, this is back in 2004, March 11th, 2004. So remember, we've got Attorney General at that time, John Ashcroft was there, and John Ashcroft wouldn't sign off on it. He saw this this plan, you know, to spy on the American people, and he said, "I can't sign off on this. This is blatantly illegal. This is crazy. There's no way we can sign off on this." And Comey agreed. Comey was the deputy at that point, deputy to John Ashcroft, and said, "Yeah, we can't sign off on this. This is blatantly illegal." And boy, that's really, you really got to stop and pause on that to think, to try to imagine how illegal something has to be for John Ashcroft to come out and say he can't support it. I mean, this is the Justice Department that was approving the use of torture, the use of extraordinary renditions, and they couldn't get their minds around this one. I mean, my God, how what terrible things must they have been planning for? What kind of spying operation were they running there, where even John Ashcroft couldn't sign off on this? That's just amazing. So, anyway, to set this up, what's happening is that by March 11th, they're needing to have this signature to renew it. And so Gonzalez is the attorney. He's the attorney for the president at this point. He's just the White House counsel. And Andrew Card is the White House chief of staff. Now, while Comey and Ashcroft are working on this, they're talking about the whole situation, and they're trying to decide how they're going to go forward. They both agreed pretty strongly that they couldn't support this program. But as they're going through the deliberations, John Ashcroft suddenly gets very, very ill.
Let the eagle soar like she's never soared.
Yeah, Yeah, that's pretty ill, if you ask me, boy. That's a vibrato that'll cut glass, you know. So John Ashcroft is in the hospital bed, okay? He had a severe case of pancreatitis. Had to have his gallbladder removed. Right now, I've had a friend who had a gallbladder surgery, and when it strikes, when you get that gallbladder, I mean, when it happens, it's now. You've got to go in now and get this taken care of, or you will die. So John Ashcroft is rushed to the hospital, and then when he's in the hospital, he's incapacitated. They gotta sedate him. They gotta give him painkillers and so on. So of course, Ashcroft turns over the reins of the Department of Justice to James Comey, the deputy. So James Comey is now the acting attorney general. All right, so Ashcroft's in the hospital. Comey's the acting attorney general. It's getting close to March 11th when they need to re-sign off on this program. And so Gonzalez and Card come to Comey, you know, and they say, all right, well, let's get the signature. Let's go on with this. And Comey says, no, I can't sign off on this. I will not certify this. This is crazy. So you've got Card and Gonzalez and the Bush administration frustrated because they're used to getting their way. You know, they're just like a spoiled kid. They're used to getting their way. And this is still back in 2004 when they've got a Republican Congress. They've got the Republican Senate. So they figure, you know, they should be getting their way. They're just spoiled kids here. And it kind of reminds me back when I was a kid. You remember when you were a kid and you'd go ask your dad for something? You know, hey, Dad, can I, you know, go to the movies or whatever? And Dad would say no. So what'd you do? Right? You went to Mom. So you'd go behind Dad's back. You'd go over to Mom, see if Mom would okay it. And, you know, and so maybe she would, maybe she wouldn't. Well, in my household, there was kind of an extra step because, I'm a child of an alcoholic. So, if Dad would say no, I'd go ask Mom. And then if Mom would say no, well, I'd just wait till Dad gets drunk and then go ask him again. And, you know, once Dad was drunk, he'd say almost anything. So this is what they did. This is what they were trying to pull. They figure, okay, here's Ashcroft all, whacked out on painkillers and morphine and halfway, you know, comatose from being in the intensive care ward. And so Mrs. Ashcroft is there taking care of him. And Card and Gonzalez call to say that they're on their way to the hospital to go talk to Ashcroft. And Mrs. Ashcroft is you know, kind of stunned at this because she'd said, you know, my husband's sick and I don't want him to have any calls and I don't want him to have any problem. I want his health to get better. And so she gets on the phone and calls back out to Department of Justice to say, hey, what's going on here? You know, why the people coming here why is the Bush administration trying to come in here and try to, you know, bother my husband while he's sick? Department of Justice calls Comey, and Comey says, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening. And so he ran to the hospital with his security detail. He also called the director of the FBI, Director Mueller, who said he'd meet him at the hospital. Now, why the hurry?
I was concerned that given how ill I knew the attorney general was, that there might be an effort to ask him to overrule me when he was in no condition to do that.
Right. Right. So Comey here is very, very frightened that they're trying to do an end run around the Department of Justice by getting the nearly comatose, drug-addled, not even acting attorney general to sign off on this illegal, warrantless wiretapping program that would spy on you, dear listener, that would spy on you and me with no oversight from a judge, no oversight, no warrants or anything like that. So this gets better. This whole story gets better. James Comey's there. He's going to run out to the hospital and watch over what's going on. Right after the break, we'll cover the rest of this story of how how Gonzalez and Card attempted to sneak an end run around our legal system. I'm Radical Russ. It's 42 after.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Is the Russ Belville Show. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Howdy, everyone. 46 after the hour, and you're listening to the Russ Belville Show. We'll be taking your calls later on at 866-55-77-377. We're talking about James Comey and John Ashcroft. This is back in 2004. John Ashcroft is lying in a hospital bed. He's in the intensive care for 6 days with severe pancreatitis. He's pumped full of painkillers. 6 days in the ICU here. And the Bush administration is desperate. because the deadline's coming up to reapprove their secret, illegal NSA wiretapping program so they can spy on good, decent American citizens like you and I. And they're having some problems because Ashcroft won't sign off on it, and neither will James Comey, who at the point of Ashcroft being in the hospital, Comey is the acting attorney general. So the poor little Bush administration is not going to get their way. So Bush, well, here, let me just give you Comey's testimony on how what Gonzalez and Card did next.
The door opened and in walked Mr. Gonzalez carrying an envelope and Mr. Card. They came over and stood by the bed, greeted the attorney general very briefly, and then Mr. Gonzalez began to discuss why they were there, to seek his approval for a matter.
This is just amazing. That imagine lying in your hospital bed, just having come out of a gallbladder surgery, suffering from severe pancreatitis. It's the middle of night. Your room is semi-dark. You got your wife in there, and the acting attorney general, your deputy, James Comey, is in there. And here comes the president's lawyer, who that's what Gonzalez was at the time, the White House counsel. Here comes the president's lawyer and the president's chief of staff to conduct business, to try to get you to sign off on something that you very clearly said when you were sober, when you were, you know, not sick, when you were, you know, acting as attorney general, something that you said you would not sign off on. And again, folks, try to imagine how illegal something has to be for John Ashcroft to not sign off on it. That's the thing that blows my mind here. So they're trying to do an end run around the law, and this is nothing we should be surprised about from the Bush administration. Now, here's the interesting thing about this, is by Gonzalez and Card going to that hospital room to discuss this super secret terrorist surveillance program, as they call it, or we call it illegal wiretaps, in a hospital room? You know, there's a law, you know, there's a penalty for knowingly and willingly disclosing information about our intelligence operations here. You can get 10 years in prison under U.S. law for just blabbing. You know the old saying, loose lips sink ships, that we talked about back from World War II? Here's two of the administration's highest-ranking officials talking to two of the Department of Justice's highest-ranking officials and the director of the FBI, all in a public, public, so to speak, hospital room where there could, you know, who knows? There could, it could be bugged. It could be, you know, the orderly could be, you know, listening in. Who knows? If we're fighting this war on terror, we can't have our leaders openly discussing our secret programs in a hospital room. So, you know, if Gonzalez doesn't go down for anything else, he should at least go down for this knowingly and willingly disclosing information about our intelligence operations. So they turn to Ashcroft. Gonzalez and Card turn to Ashcroft, and they're trying to get him to sign off on this document. And this is when Ashcroft informs them that he's not the attorney general.
And as he laid back down, he said, "But that doesn't matter because I'm not the attorney general. There is the attorney general," and he pointed to me.
Yeah, so it's like, hey, leave me alone. I'm on drugs. I'm on morphine. I can't make any of these decisions. You've got to talk to the guy who I've appointed, my deputy who's now in charge, James Comey. And, of course, Comey says that he's not going to have anything to do with that. Now, Comey, of course, was very, very angry about this whole situation.
I was very upset. I was angry. I thought I had just witnessed an effort to take advantage of a very sick man who did not have the powers of the attorney general because they've been transferred to me.
Yeah, so this was the night of March 10th when they're trying to get him to sign off. And since they wouldn't sign off, you know what they did? They just went ahead with it anyway. That's right. The Bush administration just said, well, we can't get this recertified from the Department of Justice. That's all right. We'll just keep doing it anyway. And so this was part of the testimony, too. Comey says that the program was reauthorized without us and without a signature from the Department of Justice attesting to its legality. And then that day, March 11th, 2004, was also the day of the Madrid train bombings back in Spain when we had the bombings from Al-Qaeda there in Spain. Now, I'm not one of those tinfoil hat type people, but for my tinfoil hat listeners out there, big terrorist act takes place on the same day that the Bushies need to illegally extend a program to spy on Americans, and it would be nice not to have too much media coverage of that. Yeah, either the top of the DOJ and the FBI here are complaining about this, and we made this guy attorney general. That's amazing to me. Anyway, 51 after, I'm Russ Belville. We'll be right back after these messages.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
I'm telling you, if you're looking for an excuse to impeach George W. Bush and the entire Bush administration, you're not going to find anything more glaringly simple to understand than this NSA wiretapping program that they tried to run by the Justice Department while John Ashcroft is in the hospital. This Comey testimony just blows the lid wide open on this NSA wiretapping thing and how illegal it is. You know, of course, President Bush used to always like to tell us that wiretaps require a court order.
Now, by the way, anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. Nothing has changed, by the way. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do so.
Yeah, except for the times when they don't go get a court order, which is this whole NSA wiretapping thing in a nutshell. They don't want to have the pesky rule of law in their way to do whatever it is they want to do. Now, of course, they're going to tell you that, oh, we're only going to use it against the terrorists. But then you find, like, Quaker peace groups being monitored in this program, and other people that are in peace rallies. They're trying to stifle their opposition. And you can tell by how much they just do not want to talk about this.
Trying to take advantage of a sick man because he had an appendectomy and his brain didn't work.
That's got to be the greatest deflection from Tony Snow ever. You know, usually it's, we won't talk about it because there's an ongoing investigation, or we won't talk about it because it's secret and it's good for the American people. But to turn on John Ashcroft and say, oh, well, he just had an appendectomy. What, his brain didn't work? Well, first of all, it wasn't an appendectomy. It was gallbladder removal. We're talking the removal of a, well, semi-useful organ there. And we're talking about 6 days in the intensive care in a morphine drip. With a man who's so out of it, he can hardly raise his head to speak. That's hardly an appendectomy, Tony Snow. And you can tell even more by how much George Bush doesn't even want to talk about it. You know, he comes
Kelly,
out.
Kelly, there's a lot of speculation about what happened and what didn't happen. I'm not going to talk about it. It's a very sensitive program. I will tell you that, one, that the program is necessary to protect the American people, and it's still necessary because there's still an enemy that wants to do us harm.
Boo. Boo! Boogity, boogity, boogity! Oh, the dreaded Al-Qaeda's out there, so let me do anything I want to do. Yeah, that's the excuse. That's the way they want to keep doing all of this illegal stuff. This is the way they want to shred the Constitution, to keep scaring the American people, keep us in a state of constant fear from a shadowy enemy who can never be defeated and is never seen, but he's always out there. He's always out there lurking, waiting to get you. Yeah, that's what America's turned into under the Bush administration. And frankly, it just sickens me to think that we're the torture country. We're the country that shreds the civil liberties. You know, maybe Bush's theory is this, you know, he says they hate us for our freedoms. Well, maybe his theory is if he takes away enough of our freedoms, they won't hate us anymore. Oh, boy. Well, this is the Russ Belville Show. We are the home for truly radical progressives. And let's get you on the line. Let's get some talking going on here. You can give me a call. Don't be nervous if you're a first-time caller. I'm a first-time host. Our number here is 866-55-77-377. And we're blogging right at RadicalRuss.net. Or send me an email at RadicalRuss@gmail.com.
Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620kpoj. This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome to the weekend, Radical Progressives. I am Radical Russ, and you've reached the Russ Belville Show. Hey, we're talking about the immigration bill. I don't know if you caught the news here, but there's been a compromise bill that's come out of the Senate, a compromise bill for dealing with the problem of immigration in this country. Now, I'm kind of interested in how this is suddenly a problem these days, when this has been going on for years and years and years. But, okay, so we have ourselves a problem. We need to solve it. Apparently, we've got 12 million undocumented workers in this country. And as we discuss these solutions, one of the things that always sticks in my craw when we discuss the solutions to America's problems is how some people are so quick to jump on the little guy, to jump on the little offender who is causing problems, instead of looking at the root causes. You know, we always want to treat the sniffles here in America, and we never look at what the actual disease is that we're trying to cure. So when people look at this immigration problem, they look at it as the illegals, all those illegals, they snuck across the border. And they're breaking the law. I always hear that. They're violating the law. They deserve to be sent back to Mexico. They're violating the law. Of course, it's always Mexico we're talking about here in this situation. You know, we have undocumented immigrants from all sorts of countries. Here in Portland, Oregon, we have a fairly large Eastern European immigrant population. There's also a fairly large Asian immigrant population. But nobody seems to be up in arms so much about those populations. It's always the Mexican problem. Now, yeah, we do have more Mexican workers here than any other group. But it's always this idea of picking on the little guy. You know, how can you fault someone who's living in poverty, someone who's living in a country with 40% unemployment, someone who's got a family to feed, someone who's got little kids to feed? How can you fault that man from doing anything it takes to feed his family? I mean, has anyone not read Les Miserables? I mean, are we going to throw Jean Valjean in the prison for life for stealing a loaf of bread for his family? That's what most, in fact, the large majority of these immigrants who come to this country to work just want to come here to work and make a better life for their family. And if there were a legal way for them to get into this country without waiting for their kids to starve, then they would. They are taking advantage of the opportunities that are presented to them. And here's the point. If American businesses weren't luring these people over with the promises of jobs, then we wouldn't have the problem of illegal immigration. It's supply and demand. This always gets me about the right wing. You know, so many of these people on the right wing, these Republican types, these libertarian types, they're all about the marketplace. The invisible hand of the marketplace will solve all of our problems. Supply and demand. Well, if there's a demand for labor, if there's a demand for cheap labor, someone's going to supply that demand. It's just the laws of economics. So you're going to set up this situation where these agribusiness companies, these food processing plants, manufacturing industries, construction industries, where they want to lure in the cheap labor, because we've always had an addiction to slave labor in this country. They want to bring in the cheap labor, and then you want to demonize the people who you bring in. You want to demonize the people who are just trying to get by. So the Senate has been working on this, trying to come up with a compromise, trying to come up with something that will please all the members. Now, this has been kind of a thorn in George Bush's side for a while, too, because George Bush has always been for this guest worker program, which some people are like to call that an amnesty program or whatever they want to call it. But it just recognizes the fact that they're here. We've got 12 million people already here. And further compounding the problem is the fact that we have so many of these immigrant families who have children who are born here in the United States, who they are United States citizens. And these cruel jerks want to deport a father or a mother. And what of the child? What's the child's choice here? This child's an American citizen, so what's their choice? The child's choice is either go back with mommy and daddy back to Mexico and live in poverty and have no opportunity, or as an American citizen, be able to stay in the country of your birth and take advantage of the opportunities afforded all American citizens, but you just have to do it without mom and dad. You don't get to have a family. So how cruel is this? So they get this compromise bill, and here's the details of the bill. Let me just run this down for you. According to this bill, this is, I think they're calling it the DREAM Act, and DREAM probably stands for something. But under this act, what would happen is that illegal workers who are already here in the country could go to the Department of Immigration and Nationalization and apply for what they're calling a Z card. Now, the Z card, what it is that you can get this card that allows you to work legally in the United States so long as you keep coming back to reauthorize the card. So come in and get your Z card, and so we can keep tabs on you. We can keep tabs on what you're doing, get your taxes paid, and so on. Also, the immigrant has to pay a $5,000 fine. $5,000 fine. Because, you know, when you're picking beets out in the hot sun, you got money to burn. Yeah, you got plenty of money. That's not $5,000. It's no problem, senor. Come on. if you're an illegal worker, you're already working under the table. You're already working for less than the prevailing wage, and in some cases, less than the minimum wage. How long is it going to take someone to build up a $5,000 amount of money so that they can pay some fine? And if you're already illegal and you're living under the radar, what's your motivation to want to pay this fine? I don't understand how that's going to work. It's like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll tell you where I'm at, and I'll give you $5,000. I don't understand how this is supposed to work. Here's the other thing. When you sign up for this Z card, the so-called Z card, you pay your $5,000 fine. If you're the head of household, you have 8 years. You have up to 8 years to go back to your home. So you have to identify yourself, get a Z card. You have to pay $5,000. And you have to go back to Mexico. Hey, that's a great deal. I'm sure that anybody here who's working here illegally, who's getting paid nothing, you know, getting paid close to slave wages under the table, trying to support their family and their kids, they're going to jump right at that, aren't they? Yeah, let me pay you $5,000 and go back to Mexico. That's exactly what I want to do. I can't understand how these people think. You're expecting this to work? You're expecting some poor worker to want to do that, to go back to his country? Now, here's the deal. Here's what the incentive is, allegedly here. The incentive here is that you get the Z card and you're allowed to work legally. Of course, you've already been working, so I don't know what the motivation is there. But you get your Z card, you go back to Mexico within the next 8 years, and besides, it's probably going to take you 8 years to come up with the $5,000. But anyway, you go back to Mexico, and then they promise to let you back in. The United States government is promising a minority population that they will let them back into the country. Uh-huh, sure. You know, somewhere in the happy hunting grounds, I'm sure Chief Sitting Bull's having a good laugh over that one. The promises from the U.S. government. Yeah, we can believe that. So here, they're going to let them back in, and they'll get to be able to come back in the country, and it's a promise. We promise we'll let you back in. And the other thing here is that they also want to set up a preference here. A preference in who gets to get to the front of the line. And here's the little sneaky part that a lot of people are missing in this bill, is that they're going to give preference to your education and skills over your family ties. Okay? Now, this is the part of the bill that a lot of people don't pay attention to, because when you think illegal workers, when you think immigrant work, you tend to think about the people working in the fields, and you tend to think about the people working in the food processing plants and the chicken plants and the meat packing plants and things like that. But the other side of this coin is the H-1B visa that we have. Now, for those of you that don't know, H-1B visa is a type of an exception, a type of a work-related visa for people in the high-tech industry. Now, this is something I have a lot of experience with. My background is working in information technology. And so what they'll do is that they'll have people from India or Singapore or China or any country where they're actually still teaching science. They'll have their scientists come over here and work in America under this H-1B visa program. And the president, as part of this bill, wants to increase the number of H-1B visas from 56,000 to 115,000. So we're talking, you know, a little bit more than doubling the number of high-tech workers that are going to come in here. And why are they going to allow that? Because we got people like Bill Gates who go to Congress and they say, we don't have enough high-tech workers. We don't have enough skilled workers to pull off all the new release of Vista or whatever it is they're doing next. Well, you've got plenty of high-tech workers here in America. I see them laid off every year. I see Intel laying these people off. I see Oracle laying these people off. You can't tell me we don't have enough smart, qualified Americans to do these jobs. No, the deal is is they want to get two for one. They want to get two H-1B visa people for one American. They don't want to have to pay the living wage. They don't want to have to pay the family wage. As you can see, I get a little upset about this. And if you're upset about this, you can talk to me about it. I'd love to hear your opinion at 866-5577-377. We'll come back after the break and talk to you a little bit about this, America.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star.
Hey everyone, it's 21 after. You know, I'm not immune to the to this whole immigration issue and how it's going to affect the workers in America. Let me just get that right off the bat here, because I know a lot of people out there thinking, oh, they're coming to take our jobs. And you hear that lousy quote, you know, that the repugs will always say something about, you know, they'll come here and do the jobs that Americans just won't do. Well, come on, that's poppycock. That's horse feathers, as my grandfather would say. You know, Americans will do any job. You ever seen that show on Discovery Channel, that Dirty Jobs show? I mean, I've seen some pretty bad jobs that Americans will do. Americans will do any job. The problem is Americans won't do any job for slave labor wages. That's the problem. They can't get the cheap labor that they need. Americans demand things like healthcare and a salary that they can actually afford to put food on the table and pay rent. And so, yeah, that's a problem for America's corporations. They want that cheap labor. And you know, everyone wants to come down on the illegal immigrant. They're coming to take our jobs. Well, no, they're just coming to live. They're just coming to try to make a better life for themselves. You know, and so a lot of the people that are out there that are against the whole immigration issue is they come to this whole rule of law thing, and they come and they say, well, they're in here illegally. They broke a law. They broke a law. And that's their big thing, is they stick on that they're lawbreakers. Well, everyone breaks laws. I mean, there's all sorts of laws that we break in America all the time. I know myself, sometimes I go across the crosswalk when the little orange hand is still up, and that's technically against the law. I know a lot of people that smoke cigarettes out there, and there's a little tax stamp on the top of a pack of cigarettes that you're supposed to rip, and a lot of people don't rip that, and that's against the law too. And you know, there's millions of things that we could talk about where people break a law here or there. The question is how much is it going to hurt all of the rest of us? You know, another issue here in the immigration debate is how, when the people who come here, immigrate here, how they're using all of our social services, that they'll use Medicare or they'll use WIC, or like when they go to the hospital, hospitals have to let people in, because, you know, that's just our Supreme Court has decided that you cannot deny care, cannot deny emergency care. And I'm not going to deny that this is a problem, that we do have a drain on our social services. But once again, it's not the fault of the illegal immigrant. It's the fault of the businessman who illegally hires the immigrant. It's the fault of the business and the corporation that provide the economic incentive for these people to come here. But of course, all these people are going to, you know, claim that it's something about amnesty. And, you know, Arlen Specter has something to say about that.
It is not amnesty. This will restore the rule of law. Without legislation, we will have anarchy.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm kind of curious as what you think about that. Ed in Portland, Oregon, has been on the line listening to this. And so, Ed, you know, give me your perspective on this whole immigration bill, or just immigration in general. What's your take on this?
You know, I think you were discussing a real important point about we have a highly qualified workforce here in many ways, and yet we're importing cheap labor, at least if you're going to go with Bill Gates. And, you know, your numbers about increasing the skilled folks is real interesting. And, you know, it's a real red herring, too, for a lot of corporations and so on to say, well, our training here is not very good, our science training. and using that as an excuse and skipping laid off people, they can go abroad to hire cheap labor. I mean, I just find that crazy.
Well, I get you there, Ed. I don't know that it's so much of red herring, though, about the whole science training. You know, one of the things we used to always hear back in the 80s and the 90s is that we needed to train for the jobs of the future. Remember that? Train for the jobs of the future. Well, I trained for those jobs of the future, and then they moved them to Malaysia.
I guess that's kind of what I'm talking about. Bush says, you know, our only problem is we need more community colleges. Take a course, he says. And, you know, that just does not handle the question.
Right.
Our jobs are going overseas, and it's simple to tell someone, hey, take another course, you know.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't cut it. And also, I got to tell you, Comey story you were talking about is so fascinating to me.
Oh, yeah.
Holy gosh. And the idea that it's not on every headline, every newspaper screaming out at us, the importance of that.
Well, here's something really amazing. As of last night, now I don't know if ABC or CBS got to it today, but as of last night, ABC News and CBS News made absolutely no mention of Comey's testimony, not on their websites. Well, maybe on their websites, but not on their nightly newscasts. And that's the main thing. Now, NBC broke the story and Brian Williams went off to it. But to imagine that two of the big three major networks can't even mention the story.
Yeah, my wife's in media and she found that really, really irritating. I mean, I had mentioned that ABC and CBS hadn't done a thing. And she said, what? You know, what is that about?
I know. How could you not jump at that story?
Disgraceful. Absolutely disgraceful.
Well, thanks for your call, Ed. I really appreciate the point of view there. And yes, the H-1B visa thing is something that we don't talk a lot about. You know, here in the Pacific Northwest, you know, we call it the Silicon Forest up here. And then in Northern California, that's the Silicon Valley. And the layoffs in the IT industry have just been massive. You hear it every month or every couple of months where, you know, Intel will be laying someone off, or AMD or Tektronix or, you know, any number of these manufacturers of these high-tech companies that are laying off engineers, laying off software programmers, and then the next 6 months they just replace them with some H-1B visa worker, somebody from, you know, Singapore, Malaysia, China, India, Bangladesh, whatever. And you know, we have plenty of trained people here in America. It's time for Americans to get the jobs first, and then once we've fulfilled almost full employment for our unemployed engineers and scientists, then if we have a shortfall, then we go to the H-1B visas. You don't increase the H-1B visas first. You try to get all those laid off workers a job first. And also to talk to Ed's point here about training, this is something I know a little bit about. What I do in my day job, I'm not just, you know, on the weekends here I'm Superman, but on the weekdays I'm Clark Kent. And I just have a regular day job just like the rest of you. And what I do is I teach computer software. So when the president comes out here and says, take a course, or go to a community college. Well, first of all, where's the money for these community colleges? Where's the money for this training? Already they've slashed student loans, they've slashed Pell Grants, they've slashed all sorts of educational opportunities. The only educational opportunity you get now is if you join the military and get the GI Bill, but of course that means shipping your butt off to Iraq or Afghanistan for you know, now was it 15 months per tour? So, you know, this training thing, I'd love to give more training, but here, President Bush, I got to tell you something. There are some people who will just never get computers. I can just tell you that from experience. There are some people that no matter how much training you give them, they are just not going to get it. So what are we going to do for the American people? What are we going to do for the American worker? We're taking your calls here at 866-5577-377. I'm Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show. You can check us out at RadicalRuss.net. We'll be right back after the news at the bottom of the hour.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
33 after the hour, it's Radical Russ. We're talking about immigration and this new immigration bill that's been a compromise bill at the Senate and the White House. All sorts of interesting perspectives here on this bill. You know, it's not an easy issue, this whole immigration issue. It's not easy when we're talking about how labor is going to react to it, how our law and order people are going to react to it. But the one thing that's overriding in this to me is that we need to stop demonizing the people themselves. There's no such thing as an illegal human being. They may have have broken a law, but that doesn't mean they need to be demonized. And, you know, we get a lot of very interesting opinions on this. And I've got Jeff on the line. Jeff in Portland is on the line talking about his perspective on this immigration issue. Jeff, tell me your little perspective on the whole Mexican government issue here.
Yeah, I was a student of Spanish language, and I took a couple courses in Latin American history, and I traveled to Mexico in the early 1980s, and they had just undergone a currency devaluation that had impoverished many of the people, you know, from the middle class on down. What we have to remember is up through the 70s, a lot of the poor countries of the world were actually seeing improvements in their standard of living and so forth. And it sort of like this Reagan right-wing boot heel came down on all of the third world, high interest rate, debt, and things like that. And then the policies of not having their governments provide social services. But I want to say this. Mexico is a country where the ruling classes have never invested in their people. And they promote population growth, but they don't invest in the lives of their people. They don't invest in the infrastructure. There are very few democratizing institutions, money that The elite classes,
listen to me. Yeah, I'm sorry, Jeff. I got to keep going here. We got more people coming here, but I agree with your point there. And I think that we've got a similar situation, and you made that comparison to Reagan. I think we have a similar situation beginning to take root here in America. I mean, you just mentioned how, you know, they promote population growth, but don't do anything to invest in the infrastructure of the people. And that's what we have here in America. We have these right-wing groups that are going around fighting against birth control, fighting against Planned Parenthood, fighting against any sort of contraception efforts. And what does that create? That creates more people, and that creates more of a lower, a working class that they can control. So I thank you very much for your call. Appreciate that. That's something that we also need to look at, is the fact is, what is the economic incentive for the illegal immigrant, to come here to America? Part of it is the deplorable conditions in Mexico and the other Central American countries. And how much does the United States affect those policies down there in Latin America? That is something I think we really need to take a look at if we want to try to solve this problem. We cannot solve it just as a localized American problem. This is a global problem. And speaking of the people that want to try to solve this global problem, just to move on here in kind of an awkward segue, I was flipping around the TV channels the other day, and I happened to catch my new favorite show. I don't know if you've seen this show. I think it's only had a couple of episodes so far, but this new show of mine that I found on cable, it's called 10 Old Straight Christian White Dudes in Blue Suits. Have you seen this show? It's a great show. They have this big stage, and there's like these 10 little podiums up there, and then these 10 old straight Christian white dudes come out, and they talk for like an hour. What's that? Ricky Champagne's telling me that's the GOP debate. Oh, okay. I didn't realize that's what it was called. I thought it was just called 10 Old Straight Christian White Guys in Blue Suits. But okay. Anyway, this GOP debate took place the other day, and this was amazing. This was amazing. You know, we talked about the Comey scandal a little earlier here today, but here at the GOP debate, these guys couldn't fall over themselves fast enough to talk about which one of them supported torture more. You know, Brit Hume from Fox News, he was there, and he was one of the moderators, and he asks the ticking bomb question. Now, that's the old saw about, okay, there's terrorists in America, they've set off some nuclear bombs, and there's more nuclear bombs that are set to go off, and we've captured one of the terrorists, we've got him in a cell, and we got to find out where the next bomb is going to go off. The ticking bomb scenario. Now, despite the fact that this scenario never happens, never has ever happened. They always pull this scenario up here to try to justify torture. And listen to these guys tripping over themselves, trying to be the big torture guy. We'll start off with old Mayor Rudy Giuliani 9/11. Rudy 9/11, Giuliani 9/11, 9/11, September 11th. Did I mention I was mayor during September 11th? Rudy Giuliani. Here's his take on enhanced interrogation techniques.
I would tell the people who had to do the interrogation to use every method they could think of. Shouldn't be torture, but every method they can think of. I'd say every method they could think of, and I would support them in doing that, because I've seen what...
Yeah, enhanced interrogation techniques. They should do anything they could think of, but not torture. Shouldn't be torture, just anything you can think of. Now, you got to remember what the Attorney General has said torture is just anything that does not cause death or what is torture is something that would cause death or severe organ failure. So that's a pretty broad little map there that we can have. Now Giuliani wasn't the craziest one, and you know that's saying something. Tom Tancredo, he's this representative from Colorado. Tom Tancredo's kind of lost his grip on reality. Here's what he's looking for.
Nuclear devices have gone off in the United States. More are planned, and we're wondering about whether waterboarding would be a bad thing to do. I'm looking for Jack Bauer at that time. Let me tell you.
Listen to those Republicans all laughing and applauding for Jack Bauer. Jack Bauer is a fictional character on a television show, Mr. Tancredo. Man, well, of course, you know, when you're talking about the GOP, though, that's the kind of people they like. I mean, they had a fictional president in Ronald Reagan, so, you know, why not have a fictional terrorism fighter? Oh, boy. But, of course, taking the cake here is our old friend, the flip-flopper, a multiple-choice Mitt Romney here. Here's his take on Guantanamo.
I'm glad they're at Guantanamo. I don't want them on our soil. I want them in Guantanamo when they don't get the access to lawyers they get when they're on our soil. I don't want them in our prisons. I want them there. Some people have said we had a closed Guantanamo. My view is we had a double Guantanamo. We had to make sure that the terrorists...
A double Guantanamo. You know, I like a double Guantanamo with cheese and a side of fries. That's my... Double Guantanamo? What? Are you insane? Am I the only person here that has watched the country that I love, watched the United States of America become a place where we have leading candidates for the nomination for President of the United States endorsing torture, saying that torture is great, we should have more torture, and not giving people lawyers, that's great too, and locking them up without any charges? Yeah, we need to double that. We need to make that twice as much. Boy, what has happened to my country? You know, sometimes, you know, when they talk about how America won the Cold War, I kind of wonder, you know, Russia's been having elections and America's been having czars lately. So who really won the Cold War here? I can't believe it. I just cannot believe that we're listening to these men up there talking about how they support torture and America should be the country that tortures. And then, of course, remember the last debate they had, the previous debate where three of them raised their hands when asked if they didn't believe in evolution. So we've got the party that doesn't believe in evolution and believes in torture. There's your GOP candidates, folks. There's the people running for the nomination of president. This is just insane. We got more of the insanity coming up here right after the break. We're going to talk about the one candidate of the 10 GOP candidates who actually said something approaching reality. It shocked me. So stay tuned. We'll get that right on after the break. It's 42 after.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Yeah.
This is the Russ Belville Show. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
So I'm watching the TV the other night, watching my new favorite show, 10 Old Straight Christian White Dudes in Blue Suits, otherwise known as the Republican Debate in South Carolina. And, of course, it was shocking to hear how the candidates were all jumping all over themselves trying to say which one loved torture more. You know, which one is going to be the big bad guy who's going to torture people? Because, you know, that's what the Republican voter is looking for, really. You know, your right-wing people is looking for big, tough daddy. Who's going to be the big, tough daddy who will be the meanest guy on the block to take care of the country? You know, never mind the fact that our wages are going down and we got no schools, we got no health care, and New Orleans isn't rebuilt yet. Who's going to be the toughest guy to pick on Al-Qaeda? Who's going to send them guys to the Guantanamo? But aside from that issue there, the other thing that caught my eye during this GOP debate, out of the 10 candidates up there, one of the candidates actually said something true. I know this. It was on, as you know, we had Britt Hume of Fox asking questions, and some truth came out. It was an amazing thing.
You know, damn well I like Britt Hume.
Well, sorry, Ricky. I'm glad you like him. I don't like him very much myself. But this had to do with Ron Paul. Now Ron Paul is a Republican congressman from Texas. He ran for the Libertarian nomination in 1988. So he does have, you know, he leans toward that Libertarian side, which these days, if you lean libertarian, that makes you actually a conservative. I mean, these other nine guys on the stage, I would call them far from conservatives. If what conservatism means is to mind your own business and take care of the American people. So Ron Paul is up there, and they ask him about 9/11, you know, and Osama bin Laden and the terrorism and all that. And here's Ron Paul speaking truth to power.
Have you ever read about the reasons they attacked us? They attack us because we've been over there. We've been bombing Iraq for 10 years. We've been in the Middle East. I think Reagan was right. We don't understand the irrationality of Middle Eastern politics. So right now we're building an embassy in Iraq that's bigger than the Vatican. We're building 14 permanent bases. What would we say here if China was doing this in our country or in the Gulf of Mexico? We would be objecting. We need to look at what we do from the perspective of what would happen if somebody else did it to us.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the sound of Ron Paul hitting the nail on the head. That's right, the Radical Russ Nail on the Head Award for Congressman Ron Paul. Yeah, they attack us because of what we do, okay? It's not like out of the middle of nowhere, all of a sudden they said, hey, I got an idea. Let's knock down the World Trade Center. That'll be fun. No, this takes place after years and years and years of U.S. interventionism in the Middle East, of us putting our soldiers on their holy lands, of us setting up permanent bases in their holy lands, of us bombing Muslim countries and putting sanctions on Muslim countries year after year after year. You know, if you saw your children dying of starvation, if you saw your school, the school you went to as a kid, bombed into oblivion, if you saw mothers dying and children dying day after day after day, yeah, maybe you'd get a little upset about that. But of course, you know, Rudy Giuliani, well, he's not going to have any of that. This is Rudy Giuliani taking on Ron Paul.
That's really an extraordinary statement. It's an extraordinary statement of someone who lived through the attack of September 11th. That we invited the attack because we were attacking Iraq. I don't think I've ever heard that before, and I've heard some pretty absurd explanations for September 11th.
Well, maybe the reason you haven't heard it before, Rudy Giuliani, is because you're so busy memorizing your speech with the word September 11th in it 30, 40 times that you never stop to think about what actually caused September the 11th. It was caused because of U.S. imperialism. It was caused because we don't know how to mind our own business. It was caused because we arrogantly stomp around the world trying to infect the world with our democracy and our capitalism. Now, I love our democracy. I love our capitalism. But you cannot force it on people. You cannot force it at the barrel of a gun. People have to rise up themselves and create democracy. You cannot impose democracy on people. People have to earn it, like our founding fathers earned it, like many democracies earned it, through the people marching through the streets, through the leaders calling for democracy and overthrowing a king or overthrowing a tyrant. You just can't come in and impose a democracy like that. That's just never, never going to work. So we'll come back right after the break. I got another clip here where Giuliani is going to try to take Paul to task on this. And Paul's not having any of it. Paul is going to stick to his guns and say that U.S. imperialism is what caused 9/11. And I couldn't agree more. We'll also be taking your calls at 866-5577-377. And if you didn't get a chance to talk to me on the air, you can always send me an email at radicalruss@gmail.com.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
54 after the hour, we're wrapping up here at the Russ Belville Show. But if you didn't get a chance to chime in, you can email me at radicalruss@gmail.com or check out the blog at radicalruss.net. We're here every week at this time, so you can check in next weekend and we'll be here. I just want to wrap up with a couple of little things here that I had noticed as I was doing some of my research for the show. You know, tomorrow is Armed Forces Day. You may not know it, but it's a little holiday called Armed Forces Day, which celebrates the military forces, celebrates the Army, Air Force, Marines, Navy, and Coast Guard, you know, for the great job they do taking care of America. And so to celebrate Armed Forces Day, the military canceled MySpace and YouTube this week. They said, yeah, the soldiers can't use MySpace or YouTube anymore because it will sap too much bandwidth from the U.S. Army's military network. Listen, I work in IT. This is as big a red herring as you can get.
There's rumors on the internets.
Yeah, the internets. Thanks, George. This is totally a red herring, folks. The bandwidth's not the problem. The problem is that the soldiers can post videos on YouTube, and we here in America might start seeing what's actually going on. So that's what they're banning there for the YouTube. But that's in celebration of Armed Forces Day. Here's the other thing we're celebrating for Armed Forces Day tomorrow is George W. Bush is saying he's going to veto a defense spending bill that would give a 3.5% pay raise to U.S. soldiers and a $40 a month increase in benefits for military widows. And he says no, that's too much. The benefits that they've got are sufficient. And, the average service member gets $1,300 a month. Now, this raise that they would get that he wants to veto works out to about an extra $6 per troop. There's your support the troops, folks. There's your support the troops Republican Party. Can't cough up $6 for our soldiers out there in Iraq and Afghanistan, even as they increase their tours from 12 months to 15 months. This is disgusting. Now, I want to... Let's wrap up with that. And also the other anniversary that's coming up is we've got the one-year anniversary of the Maliki government in Iraq. That's right. 1 year ago, they stood up. Remember that? Remember how we said when they stand up, we'll stand down and we'll get them a government that's democratically elected and the sun will shine and the birds will chirp and it'll be a beautiful thing. Well, here's what we've got in the one-year anniversary of the Maliki government in Iraq. We've had 950 American troops been killed. We've had 7,000 wounded. We've spent about $120 billion. We've raised our troop levels from 130,000 to what's soon to be 170,000. We've escalated we've extended their tours from 12 months to 15 months. We can't even get their parliament to put together any amendments to the Constitution because every time this parliament gets together, they're so dysfunctional and they're so wrapped up in their whole religious rivalry that they can't get any work done. I mean, just the other day, they had a slap fight. It looked like the legislature out there in Taiwan, you know, had guys slapping each other and fighting. They can't get any work done. They've had 25,000 Iraqi civilians killed over the year of the Maliki government, and 500,000 Iraqis have left. We've got a problem with refugees now from Iraq. And get this, $5 billion worth of Iraq's money, worth of their budget, just gone, just lost due to corruption, and they failed to spend about $8 billion of their budget. So they lost $5 billion just from corruption. Now, I know $5 billion doesn't sound like a whole lot, right? But in Iraq, that's about one-eighth of their budget. One-eighth of the country's budget lost due to corruption. And, of course, oil production is still down. Electricity production is still down. Well, that's your purple thumbs there. That's your votes for the Maliki government there. Great heck of a job, George. Heck of a job, Bushy. Yeah, this is the Radical Russ Show, Russ Belville Show. I'm Radical Russ, and... Well, I hope things go better for you than they've been going for our troops and for our country. I hope that we can work together to turn this around. It's thanks to listeners like you and thanks to people getting active that we can make a change. I'm Russ Belville. This is the Russ Belville Show. We'll catch you next week.